This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, the leader in offshore investing, connecting South Africa to opportunities worldwide. Invest better with Brenthurst.
I suppose the first thing that I must do is thank you for not going to the Three Amigos, which is a big competition for little old me. And I appreciate having an audience, and I do also appreciate that we are recording what we are doing here. So all is not lost. The organizers must be thanked for putting a 20-year-old photograph of me onto the program so that you can see from looking at the program just what 20 years in the NGO sector can do to an old lawyer. It's a question of survival at this stage, and we are still going strong. Accountability Now is fighting the good fight of exacting accountability and promoting responsiveness to the needs of ordinary people. And all too often, it leads us in the direction of corruption, maladministration, and unbridled greed. The Chancellor of the University of Free State says that South Africa has a greed problem. And the greed is the greed of the ANC, which has morphed itself from a glorious liberation movement into an organized crime syndicate. The Madlanga Commission, which is what we're here to discuss today, is the latest of many commissions of inquiry, which has been appointed by the president to look into some complaints that were made by General Mkhwanazi in July last year, when he stood up and pointed out that corruption of the Criminal Justice Administration has run rampant, not only in his home province of KZN, where I see they just started getting to the evidence on that in the last 24 hours, but also in metros and in national police in other parts of the country. And the commission has been active since September last year. It's had its lifespan expanded or extended in order to make room for the amount of tales that have been pouring out during the course of the evidence. And it's probably as well as we start out on the discussion to look at what the terms of reference of the inquiry are. They're quite narrow in a way. It's empowered to investigate whether criminal syndicates have infiltrated or exerted undue influence over various police services, the state security agency, the judiciary, and other state institutions, as well as any member of the national executive responsible for criminal justice system in facilitating it. It's also empowered to look into the adequacy of current legislation, policies, and institutional arrangements in preventing such infiltration. Now, if you take that as a fair summary of what the Madlanga Commission is obliged to do, you'll see that it has a big job on its hands, and it's no wonder that its term has been extended and is likely to be extended again. There was even a question yesterday when Ian Cameron from the DA, the Police Portfolio Committee chair in the National Assembly, was asked whether it shouldn't just become a permanent commission. Now, I think it's quite important to understand what a commission of inquiry really is. And this is sometimes lost sight of in the context of the number of commissions of inquiry that get appointed. Some rude people say it's just a place to park a political hot potato until the potato cools down, and then you end the commission and everybody's forgotten what it was that was in need of attention and an inquiry. A commission of inquiry is not a court of law. It's not a trial. It's not a criminal case. It's an inquiry into the facts relevant to the terms of reference. And what commissions of inquiry do is they receive evidence, they examine the evidence, and they then find facts on the basis of which they make recommendations that fall within the scope of their terms of reference. Now, you will have noticed from everything going back to the Marikana Commission and the Sariti Commission, those were into the shootings at Marikana and the arms deals, right through the Nugent Commission, which cleaned up SARS very quickly, the Mpati Commission that had a look at the PIC, that what the commissions do is find the facts and make the recommendations. The trouble is that the findings of fact bind nobody, and the recommendations are of the take it or leave it variety. So if government is not interested in implementing the recommendations of a commission of inquiry, then it simply folds its hands and gets on with the job of running the country without any assistance from the commission of inquiry. All commissions of inquiry are a tool of the executive branch of government. You'll notice that the judges who serve in these do not come to the inquiry dressed in their robes and their court finery. They wear a suit. And that is because they are helping the executive branch of government to get on top of a complicated set of facts, which those who are involved in the daily business of running the country don't have time to go into, or indeed the expertise to go into. So you get yourself a situation in which the Commission of Inquiry is doing work for the executive branch of government and giving advice in the form of recommendations to government. And in this particular Matlanga Commission of Inquiry, we've become acquainted with a lot of skullduggery, corruption, malfeasance within the Criminal Justice Administration. And the interest of accountability now in this is not to see people locked up for doing that, but to see remedial legislation passed that will make it more difficult to behave in the way that we've heard about and seen on our television screens in the last little while. So if we just bear in mind that a commission of inquiry is not a solution to a problem, but a way of examining a problem and of making recommendations, it reduces public expectations in relation to what a commission of inquiry can really do. Now, when we started out with the new South Africa, we gave ourselves a constitution that was negotiated over many years, which replaced the system of apartheid, the parliamentary sovereignty of the olden days, with a supreme constitution in which the rule of law is regarded as supreme itself. And most importantly, in Section 2 of the Constitution, it says that laws or conduct that are inconsistent with the Constitution are invalid, and that invalidity means that they can be struck down for their invalidity if they do not pass constitutional muster in litigation in a court of law that culminates in a finding or a confirmation by the Constitutional Court that the law that is under attack is unconstitutional. Now, the underlying theme of everything that is coming out in the Matlanga Commission is the corruption in the criminal justice system. Now, this constitution does not mention corruption anywhere at any time. It says that the police must prevent and combat crime of all kinds, and that the National Prosecuting Authority, which was only formed in 1998, must prosecute all kinds of crime at all times. No ifs, no buts. And that quite quickly it became apparent that the failure to talk about corruption in the Constitution and in the original police and prosecuting authority legislation was not enough. So we had quite a lot of work happening over the years. The Prevention of Corrupt Activities Act came in 1998, which is just the same year as the NPA Act. We then had the Directorate of Special Operations, which everybody called the Scorpions. They were formed in 2000. And then the masterpiece of the of Parliament is an act called PRECA. It's the Prevention of Corrupt Activities Act. That came in 2004. And with the help of those acts, it was possible, using the talents of the Scorpions or Directorate of Special Operations, it was possible to make a go of taking on the corrupt. So, for example, the chief of police, a man called Jackie Salebi, was sent to jail for 15 years for corruption. Tony Yengeni, who was the chief whip of the ANC in the National Assembly, went down for defrauding Parliament. And there were other examples that indicated that the anti-corruption machinery of state was functional. And in 2007, Jacob Zuma came along and won an election at Polokwane in December of that year, at which a resolution was passed calling for cabinet to disband the Scorpions, the Directorate of Special Operations, and to take those in the Directorate of Special Operations, which worked on a troika principle where there was prosecution-led anti-corruption activity, the prosecutors calling the shots, the investigators and crime intelligence working under the prosecutors, which is a very different way to the way in which the police work. The police have an investigation and a docket is prepared and it's presented to a prosecutor who says, I can prosecute this or take it away and try harder. So the Directorate of Special Operations, I think, had a formula that could work in real life. But unfortunately, about 170 members of Parliament were caught by it for cheating on their travel allowances. It was called the Travelgate scandal, and that made them unpopular with people who had a vote in Parliament. Jacob Zuma himself had problems in relation to what he did, organizing some protection money from the French arms dealer that now shares the dock with him in a case that is still pending and only likely or possibly coming to trial next year. So the anti-corruption machinery of state really got messed up by the decision to close down the Scorpions, who were making headway and scoring well on the work that they did. They were unpopular with the police because they cherry-picked the cases that they wanted to do. They behaved like Hollywood cops and did a lot of fuss and press when they effected arrests. That type of thing irritated the ordinary police who were just doing their duty. So the decision to close down the Scorpions was litigated, and it ended in three appeals in the Constitutional Court. The first one, the court said, you premature, There's no legislation for us to look at here. We defer to the other branches of government. You come back later if you want to. They then passed the legislation in 2008, closing down the Scorpions, and Bob Glenister took them on again, took on the government for closing down the Scorpions, and he went back to court a second time. And in that case, 9 judges sat. 4 of them agreed with the government that everything was fine, and 5 of them said, no, this is not good enough. And there is a passage in the judgment of the majority in that case which tells you all you need to know about why the court, majority of the court, was prepared to intervene and do something. Under the heading, the need and rationale for combating corruption, the majority, Deputy Chief Justice Moseneke and Justice Edwin Cameron, said the following: there can be no gainsaying that corruption threatens to fell at the knees virtually everything we hold dear and precious in our hard-won constitutional order. It blatantly undermines the democratic ethos, the institutions of democracy, the rule of law, and the foundational values of our nascent constitutional project. It fuels maladministration and public fraudulence and imperils the capacity of the state to fulfill its obligations to respect, protect, promote, and fulfill the rights guaranteed in the human rights, in the Bill of Rights. When corruption and organized crime flourish, sustainable development and economic growth are stunted, and in turn, the stability and security of society is put at risk. Having come to the conclusion that that is what is needed, that same court said, our law demands a body outside executive control to deal effectively with corruption. And Parliament was ordered to go away, back to the drawing board, and make new laws. And they did so with limited success. The 3rd Glenister case also said, adequately independent, structurally, and on the basis of the operations of the anti-corruption machinery of state, is required if we are going to get on top of corruption. Well, I'm afraid we've never had anything like that, which is why General Nkosi had to complain, and which is why the Mablunga Commission is getting corns on its rear ends from sitting through all the evidence that is pouring out in that litigation. Now, it's hoped, because Mablunga was a judge in the 3rd Glenister case, that he will remind the government of the passages that I've read to you out of Glenister 2 and Glenister 3, and will indicate that remedial legislation is required so that we have independent anti-corruption machinery of state, people who are appointed to deal with corruption in much the same way as the Scorpions did. The Scorpions, at Chile's heel, was that they did not have secure tenure of office. They could be closed down by a simple majority in Parliament, and of course, that's what happened to them. If you place your anti-corruption machinery in as a Chapter 9 institution, in terms of the Constitution, you need a 2/3 majority in order to close that institution down. Also, in the 3rd Glenister case, Edwin Cameron wrote a separate judgment about what you do to appoint people into your anti-corruption machinery so that they are not vulnerable to being corrupted themselves, so that they have the clout and the ethos and the capacity to deal with corruption without being corrupted themselves, to do their jobs properly. And that is what it is our hope will come out of the Madlanga Commission. If it doesn't, it is possible to go back to court and to say that the 2024 legislation that brought IDAC into being is unconstitutional. And some of you will remember that I referred to Section 2 of the Constitution that says laws that are inconsistent with the Constitution are invalid. Now, you can get the IDAC legislation invalidated and force government to go back to the drawing board and to create anti-corruption machinery that actually serves the people of South Africa properly. That's what Matlanga's mission could be if it's properly executed. We're not going to know until we see the final report. And now I'm down to naught.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, building wealth and protecting legacy since 2004. Invest better with Brenthurst.